WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively through the election period, but that's not going to stop us from talking about it in this segment. Before we do, I need to tell you we're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be at Pappas on Friday in Cockeysville celebrating their 50th anniversary, as well as getting together with a bunch of old friends. Dan Rodericks will be joining us on Friday from the Baltimore Sun. We'll be talking about his one-man show, as well as some politics, I'm sure. We're going to be joined by David Steele, who's written yet another book on sports and race and culture. I'm looking forward to having him out. He's looking forward to the crab cake. And then, of course, Mike Bordick, former Baltimore Oriole, my pal. I know that's hard to believe that I have pals with the Orioles, but we actually like each other. He's going to be bringing Adam Kolarik and Frank Kolarik from League of Dreams by on Friday. And we're also going to have Justin Steve from Pappas stop by, talk about 50 years. I'll be giving away Maryland lottery scratch-offs from the Ravens, as well as talking about our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. And, of course, Goodwill next week. We're going to be serving a lot of meals to less fortunate folks on Wednesday, the 23rd, down at the Convention Center. You want to roll your sleeves up with me? Come on out and help people on Wednesday. Just throw me a note, ness@baltimorepositive.com. I'll straighten you up with the Goodwill people, and we'll meet you down there on Wednesday morning. Me and my wife will be in Thanksgiving spirits. We're going to give on Wednesday, and then we're going to be thankful that I have cinnamon ice cream and delicious apple pie from Wise Markets on Thursday. Josh Kurtz is a defending champion around here. He's been on with Don and I many times through the course of Baltimore Positive. Now I'm almost 5 years into Baltimore Positive. He is at Maryland Matters. You can find him at Maryland Matters out, marylandmatters.org, as well as Josh Kurtz News out on the Twitter place. He is all things Maryland news and politics. And, you know, I didn't bother you before the election, dude, because I was like, Josh doesn't need to deal with me and speculation and polls. And I had Patrick Gonzalez on this week talking about whether the pollsters were right or wrong. But you do this professionally. I do this as a citizen. What did you make of the election? What's the great takeaway other than a bunch of Democrats taking over the state for the first time in a long time?
Yeah, well, that's sort of the obvious storyline, because, yeah, we're going to, you know, we're going to have all Democratic control in Annapolis for the first time in 8 years. And that's pretty significant.
Well, that means a lot for Baltimore, right? Like, literally.
Yeah, well, you would think so. You know, just having a new governor from the city is going to mean a lot. Absolutely. But, you know, you mentioned the polls and pollsters. The polls in Maryland in some ways were more accurate than they were a lot of other places, which, you know, that's kind of getting us off on a different conversation. But, you know, they showed Wes Moore winning by 30, and he came pretty close to that, whereas a lot of the national polls got stuff wrong.
Well, getting it right here and figuring it out here, because for years, all the time we've ever spoken, we've called ourselves a purple state, and purple, it could go either way, and like, we've had 8 years of a Republican governor, and we are a Democratic dominated state. I mean, that's just a little bit of an anomaly at this point. And where Hogan tries to fit himself into the middle and not a part of Trumpism, boy, this election has really shown me how much different the world is. And I saw the Obamas dancing with the young lady who just passed away at 113 years of age all over my timeline. It was a beautiful thing. I'm thinking, man, what the hell happened? And the same day, Trump's getting orange and he's coming back and, blah, 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 and all that.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, 8 years ago, I was a guy that would vote for Republicans. You know what I mean? I voted for Larry Hogan, right? So, like, I'm not – but the politics has moved me to the point where I have said out loud, and I'll say again, I will never – I'm where my dad is now. I will never vote – my dad had Herbert Hoover. So my dad would never vote for a Republican, even though he thought Matt Mathias wasn't a bad guy. Right. My dad never voted for Helen Deitch, never voted for any Republican because of Herbert Hoover. I've kind of had that moment with this party and insurrections and Kerry Lake and Fox News. I'm a Democrat now. I can't say, well, I'm independent. I'm not. I have been forced onto the side of being a Democrat, which is, I think there might have a lot of people who voted for Larry Hogan had no interest in voting for that lunatic Cox, who I hope goes away.
Right. Well, you're right. I mean, this is certainly one of the things this election has shown us is how, you know, just sort of a unique political figure Larry Hogan has been in Maryland, because he is so popular and he does have so much Democratic support, and he's going to leave office with, you know, 70% job approval rating. And yet he couldn't even, you know, get his own party to nominate his preferred candidate in the primary. And the voters did go with the the Trumpy candidate, and you know there are consequences about that for the Maryland Republican Party.
And for a lot of Republican parties where
Around, yeah.
they got their clocks cleaned. I mean, we're going to talk about nationally, the Trump candidates were seen as they should be,
Right.
downstream of a criminal. I don't know how else.
Yeah.
There's no other way I can say that
Yes, very
other
artfully
than,
put. Yeah.
well, not even downstream of a criminal, but downstream of truth, of
Right.
facts, of
Right.
knowledge, of science, and really kind of anti-people to some degree, and
Right.
so pro-rich, so pro-right, white, so pro, taking care of wealthy people who fund them. And
Right.
that's really probably one of the big stories here is money too, because the thought is if you throw enough money at it, you can win. And maybe JD Vance can win, but there was so much dirty money thrown
Right.
at trying to defeat Democrats where they could, whether it was Oz in Pennsylvania or whether it's still Herschel Walker going on down in Georgia right now.
Right.
The amount of money that was thrown at this that money could buy an election is, I don't know, that's sort of, we would think in the modern era that that might be possible, right?
It's been known to happen. Yeah, and I mean, you know, just the money was being thrown indiscriminately too, because, you know, special interests wanted Republicans. They didn't care about the quality of the candidate or whether the person was in any way, shape, or form qualified for the office. You know, they just wanted a reliable vote there for their agenda in Washington. And you know, it seems to have backfired some. We'll see about Georgia, but that's you know, that's it's like, you know, morals, scruples, candidate quality hardly matter. You know, what really matters is the political party at the end of their name on the ballot.
It's interesting for me because I'm in Baltimore County now, so I voted in the county for the first time in
Oh,
20
yeah.
years, right?
How
So
did that feel?
I went to my, I went where I've always gone to vote, and I voted on election day, and I filled the
Right.
form out. I actually did the number two pencil and did the
Yeah.
bubbles to honor my mother a little bit because that's how we voted, and they give you the big
Right.
form. So I didn't want to mail in, and it's not. I didn't want to apply ahead of time to get it mailed. Like, I didn't want to do all that.
Right,
So I'm
right,
just like,
right.
I'll take an hour, I'll go vote. No problem. So,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it's unlike Wisconsin or in Georgia where they make you stand in line till 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
I thank God. I mean, that doesn't feel like democracy to me. It feels more like less than that.
Yeah.
But in our state, in the county, Dutch, Johnny O, I mean, even Kwaise in the some of these races were so, I didn't even see them campaign. You know what I mean? It
Right.
was very, very strange to me to see so much campaigning in tight races, like Heather Mazier, which we
Right.
thought was tighter than it was, certainly Anne Arundel County, which we're just getting settled now.
Right.
There was a thought that Calvin Ball was in trouble in Howard County as well. Most of these elections held form, right? I mean, there's no shock anything in the state of Maryland that anything happened, other than maybe Heather Mazier getting her clock cleaned. And I'm tremendously disappointed in the people of the Eastern Shore in a lot of ways. But I found that to be shocking that an anarchist, an insurrectionist, a guy who took guns into Congress, a guy who doesn't get
Right.
bills passed, could possibly be that popular to the people in one.
You know, sometimes it's hard to outrun fundamentals, and that district is just fundamentally really, really conservative. And you know, everything you say about Harris is true. Heather Mazier ran a really good, aggressive, energetic campaign that got a lot of people excited. She raised a lot of money, but you know, ultimately, you just can't. Sometimes you just can't outrun the fundamentals. And I haven't looked at the numbers there lately. My guess is that they've narrowed some since election night. I mean, election night, it looked like she was losing by 25 points, and I'll bet it's closer now. And that actually speaks to an interesting phenomenon, because a lot of the races you mentioned still seemed close on election night. And you know, as these mail-in ballots have rolled in, and there have been hundreds of thousands of them around the state, the results have really, you know, not the final results have changed, but the margins have changed. You know, our kind of our perceptions have changed. I looked at results on election night, and intellectually I knew, well, this isn't the final result because there's so many ballots out there. But as the margins have grown, it's just kind of blown my mind. It's, you know, you really have to get into a different mindset to wait for these election results before you kind of jump to conclusions. It's interesting.
Well, the mail-in ballot thing, we're not doing that, right? I mean, obviously, and it's not about being a Democrat or Republican. It's about consumer confidence. which one party doesn't want the consumer to have confidence and the other party kind of does. And I think I would think that Jessica Hare and Stuart Pittman, that this charade that's gone on for the last week, week and a half, up and down, and the fact that there are going to be people running around Anne Arundel County saying that she got screwed and like and all that, I mean, good on her for calling right away and saying, I lost. I mean, God, you know, I don't know her at all, right?
Yeah,
I know
Stuart
a little bit, enough to know that he's an honorable human. But I just think from a confidence standpoint, I'd like to feel better about a wrapped up election, that we're not counting ballots for Katie Porter out in California. And, you know, the week after the election, I guess we're so attuned being old guys like us that we, on that Tuesday night, forever going back to Jimmy Carter and Nixon, if you go back that far, or Bill Clinton or George Bush, wherever you are, that you went to bed knowing what the hell was going on, other than Gore.
Yeah,
I was hanging chads and, and I, you know, I don't mention Chad Steele often, but hanging chads are, you know, that was something we've gotten away from, right? Hanging chads were a bad idea, so we don't have those anymore. I think this notion of 10, 12, 15 days of a dispute for an election, that's not good for democracy. I mean, anywhere, I don't think.
I mean, I think I could argue that both ways, because I think, you know, you want to be careful not to prematurely call races too. And so there is a value in sort of, you know, it's a cliche, but there's a value in waiting till every, you know, last ballot has been counted. I think even on election night, like you mentioned Jessica Hare in Anne Arundel County, I think her people knew that there, even though they were ahead, I think they knew there was a problem. And it had to reach a certain, you know, point where a certain number of mail-in ballots rolled in that they could officially sort of confirm in their minds that, yes, she doesn't have a path to victory. And that's when she called Pittman on a Tuesday night and to concede. But, you know, it's just going to take an adjustment of thinking, I think. I don't know if there is some way to sort of safeguard that the election night results are 100% guaranteed, then yeah, that's my preference too. But, you know, maybe it is better to count all the ballots. I don't know.
But you could still mail a ballot on Tuesday too, right? So
that's true. Yes.
They're going to have to count some ballots afterward. But Josh Kurtz is here. He is Maryland Matters. Tell me about your organization. I know you're in a fundraising period here as well. And I like democracy, Josh, especially after watching that ish show down at in Florida on Tuesday night, where we have criminals declaring themselves eligible to run the country again. I love democracy. And I think that your independence in the way you do this, I have great admiration for what you're trying to do. And it's not easy. It's certainly not politically in this point, but we need people like you on the wall down there. I can't be in Annapolis every day. I need people like you down there and the banner and the sun and like everybody else.
Well, you know, we sort of jumped in to fill a void because the media coverage of the state house and state government and state politics has just been so diminished over the past couple of decades. And for the very reasons you say, I mean, who's watching, who's holding people accountable, who's informing voters at election time? You know, there's just so much less of that in the state than there used to be. And so that's where we think we're filling a gap. And so we're a nonprofit news organization. We've been around for 5 years. We will probably, I think we'll have the most reporters covering Annapolis during the upcoming legislative session. So, you know, we're trying to make a difference, but, you know, we're a small, you know, I want to see a robust Sun. I want to see a robust Washington Post. I'm happy that the Baltimore Banner's here. I'm envious of their deep pockets, but, you know, I feel like we fill a role too by being laser focused on the state capitol.
I got to ask you this because I went to look it up and my wife asked me this the other day. When does Westmore take over? what day is that? And then and then run me through January because you're talking about legislative. I mean, I really want, we know who won now. There's no more disputing. Harris is going to be in one. Everybody else is going to be a Democrat. The Trump thing was interesting over the weekend.
Yeah.
The counties are, and whatever the goofball in Florida is doing with the big, like 2 years from now, I'm not worried about that. What's going to happen to Maryland? Give me a little 6 month forecast here, Josh.
Well, I'll try. So the Westmore is sworn in on January 18th at high noon. It's a Wednesday. The legislature actually comes in a week earlier. That's when they start their 90-day session. I guess it's January 11th. Moore is, as you know, is starting to put his team together. He made his first five hires a few days ago, and I think we probably won't hear much more news on that front till after Thanksgiving, but certainly by the time he's getting ready to take office, he'll have a full cabinet ready to go. It's an interesting phenomenon because the legislature passes the budget during their session. They have to pass it by late March, I think, and the budget is sort of put together both by the outgoing administration and the incoming administration. And I don't think it was an accident that one of the first people Wes Moore named to his cabinet was his budget director, a Hopkins vice president named Helene Grady. So those the two teams will kind of be shaping the budget together. On top of that, the legislature has a say in the budget. And in fact, they're going to have a greater say than they used to because of a change in state law that's taking effect this January. So there's that. And, what we've seen in the past 8 years is the legislature really driving the agenda during the session. Larry Hogan has really never had much of an agenda. He kind of, he wants to play defense, he wants to hold the line on taxes, but he never came in with, like, here's my 20-point proposal or anything like that.
He
I
just
think,
stopped things or blessed them
yes,
to
well,
some degree,
that's
right?
what he said. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think this legislature is going to be a little bit deferential to the new governor and kind of wait to see what he wants to prioritize. Not that they aren't going to keep churning out all their bills too, but I think a lot of the kind of marquee bills that we pay close attention to will probably come more from the Moore administration. And so, we'll see. He's coming in with great expectations and he's coming in with a sympathetic legislature, but things can blow up too.
A sympathetic legislature. I love the way you're a real writer, Josh Kurtz. A sympathetic. What does that even mean at this point? Because the reason we're still counting ballots on Tuesday night is because Larry got in the way, right? So, what is going to create synergy here in regard to big things? Red line, Kerwin, all of these things that are big ticket items, big dream items for a guy who's not a politician, right? L literally, he's never run anything that looks like a government.
Well, I mean, I think that's going to be one of the interesting things to look for. And, curiously, his chief of staff, a guy named Fagan Harris, who's a brilliant guy, well known in Baltimore,
Beloved guy from in
social
my circle, people
entrepreneur.
are like, "Oh my God, he's the greatest."
Oh, no. And without a doubt, he is a great guy. But he, like the governor-elect, doesn't know anything about state government particularly. And so it's going to be interesting to see them make their way. I think they have an opportunity because Larry Hogan has hollowed out the state government, and there's so many vacancies in state agencies that these guys can really kind of change the face of what the state workforce looks like, and that's going to be pretty cool. But I think they're going to, like, slam into walls every now and then, and I don't think they realize how tough it is to make stuff happen in state government. So that's going to be easy. But since you asked about the legislature, I mean, it's simply a question of shared priorities, and and that's going to help the new governor move his agenda. And I think it's going to help Democrats who've been frustrated by having to coexist with Hogan for 8 years. I do think there are some Democrats in the legislature who expect Wes Moore to embrace every progressive, policy prescription. I don't think he will. I think he's going to be much more middle of the road and cautious in certain ways, even as he wants to reshape the government.
Well, just obvious things, right? Transportation, trip Baltimore, the Bay, the environment, these basic sort of tenets, the things that Hogan didn't get right, quite frankly, the things that Hogan abandoned, the governor of Maryland, except for Baltimore, and anybody that's sympathetic to Baltimore. So my vibe on this for Wes is Baltimore, 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 because if the murder rate goes down, if the jobs go up, if vacant buildings go away, if people move into downtown, if shootings stop, if the football team wins, the baseball team, like all that. But I kid a little bit about football and baseball, but I keep saying Bisciotti's all sideways with me. Who knows who's going to own the baseball team? But they're going to be going down. And I called Larry Uncle Larry. I got to come up with a nickname for Wes. Cousin Wes, your brother Wes, I don't know, whatever. They're going to have to go down to Annapolis and get a couple billion dollars for downtown Baltimore to make Ravens fans happy, right? I mean, and I say this a lot because I'm a sports guy at heart. I've been on the radio 31 years, and one of the things that really pisses me off on the media side with the Ravens is I fought to get that football team here. I paid to get that football team here. We begged, we stole, we borrowed, we stole. We went and stole. If we had to go get a franchise again, if the Orioles left, let's just say somehow John wins the Team Angelo's battle, there would be no appetite here to go stealing a team. But because they're here, there is immense pressure to give them anything they want.
but I mean, but as you know, I mean, there are proposals to build up the area around the stadiums and make them sort of real entertainment districts. There are proposals to, you know, revitalize downtown, revitalize State Center. And I think I have to believe that, you know, a Governor Moore is going to embrace a lot of them because they're, you know, if he can be convinced they're for the good of the city, he's going to do that. And he's
investing, you know, in Baltimore is going to be a reality here the next 4 years, right?
Without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah.
What does that mean? Because the legislature, I would see that the five counties here, and I've talked to all of them, you know, I've had Stuart Pittman and Johnny O and Calvin, all these people, they're all very, very pro Baltimore, not that lines down there, you know, south of Towson University, Northern Parkway. We don't care about it. It's not like that amongst these folks. It's not like that with me. I'm in the city 3 days a week. I need the city. I can't be getting shot at a corner or carjacked either.
Right.
I would think that that plays differently in Andy Harris's district. It plays differently west of Frederick, I would think, than spending the money in Baltimore. But it has been a while since Baltimore has been tended to by Annapolis.
Right. Well, and the stars are probably aligning too, because remember the Senate president, Bill Ferguson, is from the city, Adrian Jones, the House Speaker, from the county. And that makes a difference too, I think. And honestly, among Democrats, I think, you know, there's a recognition that more has to be done to help the city, Democrats across the board.
Josh Kirch is our guest, MarylandMatters.org. Find him, donate, help. Follow them out on Twitter. Make sure you're hitting their website at MarylandMatters.org as well. All right, so county to county, we didn't have a lot of change, right? I mean, really? I mean, and I would even say with Congress, the whole deal, we have not, other than Westmore, this is a pretty stable ship here at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of county executives are changing hands. In Harford County, Robert Cassily was elected to replace Barry Glassman because Glassman was ran for comptroller. In Frederick, there's going to be a new county executive. And as we sit here, we don't know who it's going to be. The mail-in count could change there, but that's a very close race. But yeah, I think you're right. Otherwise, it's been much more of a status quo election. Even in the legislature, there seems to have been much less turnover than there have been the last few election cycles, which is odd considering this was a redistricting year. I thought there would have been more churn, but there wasn't.
Is there an expectation from you as a journalist, and I guess you've covered 30 or 40 of these legislatures in January, it feels that way anyway, that this is going to be easier? I mean, is there a breath about this that we're going to get ish done? Things are going to get done, beginning in January in Annapolis. There's some expectation of that. And as a journalist, give me three or four or five things right off the top that you're like, here we go. I mean, these are things that are going to be first and foremost, and by March, you and I will get together again and we'll talk about these things being law or being done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned transportation and the red line. I think that's something they're going to want to work on, and sort of transit in general. Down in the Washington area, there's this proposal to widen the Beltway and Interstate 270. That's very controversial. I don't know if there's going to be a complete 180 on that from the new administration, but, you know, Hogan wanted to do one thing, and I don't think that's popular among Democrats. I think there's going
to
be
more. He wanted to build another bridge across the water, right? Literally.
Yeah. That I think is going to happen because they need a new bridge, but I think the rest of it may not happen. There's going to be more talk about education and education funding, more talk about, police reform, more talk about economic development that, you know, actually helps families in need. You mentioned the environment. I think even though they passed a big climate bill this year, there's going to be more work there. And then, abortion, they didn't quite finish abortion rights because they were going to vote on a measure that would have put it on the ballot this year, and they didn't. And I think that's going to come back again too. But you're right. I think there'll probably be a fair amount of agreement pretty quickly, and a lot of the high profile things will move pretty quickly.
Price of broadband. And it's one thing that I have noticed driving around the state. I've done 30 crab cakes in 30 days last
Right.
year, 31 and 31. And I don't think if you live in the city, we've all had drop calls. We all remember 20 years ago. And I mean, Verizon, can you hear me now? Right? Like
Right,
that was
right.
always the can you hear me now part of Heather Mazier's campaign. Let's just start with
Right.
that. Everywhere on the Eastern Shore, where if you live in most places off of 50, you have to drive somewhere near 50 in order to just access the world. Forget playing video games,
Right.
forget mobile wagering, which I've talked to John Martin here at the Maryland Lottery. That's coming on
Yeah.
next 2 weeks. But if your phone doesn't work, even if you live on a farm, I mean, I was down at Suicide Bridge, beautiful crab cake down there in Hurlock,
Yeah.
just north of Cambridge.
Yeah.
My phone doesn't work there, and I'm like, I'm in a restaurant on the side of the road. How can I have one bar?
Right.
And I don't think Andy Harris gives a rat's patoot about any of that in his
No.
district, but the amount of money that it's going to take, not just in Maryland, but around the country
Yeah.
for kids at home, I mean, it's the library now. The internet is the library.
Right.
And if you don't
Right.
have access to it in real time, you are probably going to vote for Donald Trump
Right.
or like that. But having information and news for lots of places outside of here, it feels onerous. It feels expensive. It feels like something that government is going to need to mandate and get behind financially. And it's a huge chunk of money, right?
It is, and I mean, I think give Hogan some credit. I think he sort of started us on that path, but it's going to take a lot more. And I
Well,
get
Hogan had the
this
campaign over there too, and he's in the car and his phone doesn't work,
yeah. And I get the sense
right?
that this will be a priority for more. And honestly, I mean, there are connectivity issues in the city too, so it resonates all over.
No doubt about it. All right, Josh is here. He is at MarylandMatters.org. Anything next couple of weeks, just a transition period here? I mean, as we get into the holidays, people going out, I guess to some degree, talking about Peter Franchot's reign, talking about 8 years of Larry Hogan, as much as looking forward, sort of looking back a little bit and saying, we're not in a bad, I mean, people that are anti-Larry Hogan, fine. I mean, I'm not anti-Larry Hogan. You said he's gutted state, the state
Agencies.
offices and agencies for sure. But he has left West with a really, really sweet financial situation that West can go now spend all the money that he was saving up, I think.
Well, Hogan and his people would say it was Hogan's doing. Democrats might say it was, largesse from the federal government. I mean, they're both right to a degree. But yeah, I mean, I was just listening to a fiscal briefing yesterday, and it seems like they're anticipating surpluses for at least 5 more years, that they'll decline a little bit for a variety of reasons. But I mean, that's pretty unusual to look that far out and see surpluses. And that's even with the possibility of a mild recession in the next year. So that's not bad. But and you're right. I think Westmore is gonna reap the benefits of
Is Westmore going to run for president? It's too
that.
early to ask.
Let's say if he were to take a truth serum and you'd ask him if that was part of his grand plan, he might say yes, but it's way too early to talk about that now, but I mean, I think he's definitely a star in the national Democratic scene, and he's
Already, quick,
already, and he's been
quick.
on, and he's probably been on a handful of national TV shows already since being elected, if not more. So,
We
and
don't
we're just
elect
going to see
black
more about
governors,
it.
not just in Maryland. We don't elect them anywhere in this
Well,
country,
yeah, he's
right?
only the third elected.
That's an amazing that's an amazing thing, right?
It is amazing, and he'll be the only one now. And I'm pretty sure he's going to be the youngest governor in the country too, which is an interesting point also.
All right. Well, maybe 2 years, 6 years, who knows?
You never
Josh, I
know.
appreciate you. How can people contribute and do what they do with you? What's the best way to help you?
Thank you, Nestor. Just, go to our website, marylandmatters.org. We are in through the end of the year. We're in a match period for our fundraising, so anything you give will be double. So, you can give electronically, you can send us a check. There are different ways to do it, but this is, like the rest of the world, we're in fundraising mode toward the end of the year. But thank you for letting me say that.
Well, thank you for coming on and giving us some wisdom, and appreciate your work. As I say to all good reporters, we need you on that wall down there. So hold them accountable and honest down in Annapolis, and I will hopefully see you on the 18th, on or about. And look, if I attended Bob Ehrlich's inaugural and ran around and had a few cocktails, I'm going to try to weasel my way in. I mean, Wes and I email from time to time, so
Yeah.
I did send him a congratulatory email. He emailed me back in the middle of the night. Wes is a good man. I'm looking forward to him taking over in a couple of months, and hopefully positive change. We all love this state, right?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a wild time. So I'll see you there.
I'll see you in January. Josh
All
Kurtz
right.
joining us here from marylandmatters.org. Make sure you're following them, adding him into your rotation for all voices out of Annapolis and throughout the state of politics here in Maryland. We didn't even mention Brooke Learman and money. We'll do that next time. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.